This is Peter Santoscano. As I was producing this show, I kept thinking to myself, why comedy and why now? I mean, it's a very heavy time in the world. But then I was reminded that comedy, sure, it can make light of situations. It can also shed light on important issues. So I hope as you listen to the show, you will laugh, you will learn, and you will feel more connected to other people who, like you, are working hard to make the world a much better place. In this show, we highlight people's stories, we celebrate your successes, and together we share strategies for talking about climate change. Welcome to the 70th episode of Citizens Climate Radio. This episode is airing on Friday, March 25th, 2022. After interviewing a comic storyteller and climate advocate, I felt inspired. So in the art house, with the help of several chihuahuas, I reveal for you the weight of carbon dioxide. You will also hear good news from over 400 healthcare providers within Citizens Climate Lobby. But first, I chat with Esteban Gast, the inspiring comedian conquering climate change. Even when he's serious, Esteban is funny. One of the standard questions I ask all my guests is, if you were to meet someone new and they ask you, so what do? What do you say?
I'm a comedian and writer and host, Maybe that's the thing. Maybe I answer in a question, right? So I go, I'm a storyteller. I think I went through phases, right? So I was a teacher, and then I was like just doing stand-up, and then I went and ran this eco community in rural Panama. We've all done that. And then I was a writer. So a lot of times I just go, oh, I'm a comedian and writer. I really love telling stories that matter, particularly silly stories. If I could tell a silly story that matters or like teaches someone about anything, ooh, that's like the sweet spot.
And perhaps the sweetest spot in the climate change podcast scene right now is Esteban's new show, Comedians Conquering Climate Change.
Picture like a late night show, like old school Johnny Carson or whatever it is, Jimmy Fallon now or Stephen Colbert. It's like we try to do that in 15 minutes. So we come up and there's a monologue about some of the latest clean energy news or just like funny stories, right? Again, it's a mix of like genuine news that's happening that's really exciting and like this is just a silly story or this is something, you know, inconsistent that we can poke fun at. So we've got a monologue and the whole time there's a guest co-host and that's the comedian who is coming along. So I'm sort of steering the ship and they're like throwing in quips, they're responding. And then we have a game. Maybe it's a guessing game, or it's like a sketch, or it is we wrote songs, catchy, fun little pop songs to try to get people to think about things a little bit differently. We're like, you know what everyone loves? Pop songs. Let's write a pop song about the, you know, the economy of solar on your roof. Ooh, because it is good. And at the end, we end with a really specific call to action. We threw out a bunch of fun statistics, but if you want to learn more about your state's grid, if you want to actually petition for people to do that, or if you want to just get on a newsletter and get some information and just start this journey, here's a way to do that. All right, we laughed, we did the thing. So what? Where do we go from here? How do we think more about this?
Esteban, I just so much love your show. It's like fresh, it's fast paced, it's funny, but how did it all get started?
I, a little bit ago, linked up with the folks at Generation 180. They're this incredible nonprofit. They exist to help, like, equip and educate people to fight against climate change, right? To help equip people to help push the frontier of clean energy, accelerate our nation's transition to clean energy is the exact wording. And they're doing that in a bunch of different things. It's like a bunch of climate solutions that we've heard about. Solar for schools is a cool thing where they put solar panel on schools, which I'm like, obviously everyone do this. Why? And talk about electric vehicles. And then they do really, really interesting things creatively and messagingly. You know what I mean? With their message. Obviously, I'm not the best messenger of their messagey things. They have like cartoons that they commission that are original cartoons for every newsletter. Like they just are really creative folks, truly passionate about artists and equipping artists and equipping everyone. They were like, we've thought about doing a podcast. And it was like a beautiful brainstorm where we like both sort of came up with the idea. And I was like, hey, I could just like bring in comedian friends and we could do this. Because I think there's a lot of wonderful podcasts, yours included, and where people can get a lot of climate info. And we were like, do we sit down with a scientist? What do we do? And we're like, you know what? Let's have it be two comedians. comedy, right, and stories and art comes from a really authentic place. And if it's something that you are authentically excited about, that you find interesting, that you're like reading about in your free time or whatever that looks like, then I think it's so easy to incorporate that into your art. I think where art gets bent out of shape is if someone at the last second goes, oh, wait, what if we do this social impact? And they put it in. They sprinkle it on up top, hoping no one will notice or hoping that, did I do it? Did I check the box? The comedy that I try to do and the art that I try to create is born out of the things that I'm actually thinking about and reading about. I actually am interested in climate change and clean energy. Growing up with my dad talking about that and going and seeing An Inconvenient Truth when it came out with Al Gore, and I was like 8 years old, you know, it's like, I'm fairly young. I was way too young. But my dad being like, no, let's sit down and watch this, right? And so starting these like flagpoles of my identity, of my interest, starting really young. So I think for me, hopefully it doesn't feel jaded. It doesn't feel disingenuous. It feels like, hey, these are things I'm actually thinking. You know, it's like, you could ask me now where, what, you know, like what's happening right now with President Joe Biden and his climate agenda. And I, even if I didn't have the podcast, Comedians Conquering Climate Change, even if I didn't work with Generation 180 in the way that I did, it's like, I would still know. I would still be interested in it because I'm interested in it.
An Inconvenient Truth. Okay. So many guests in the past 69 episodes point to that movie as being incredibly important to their climate awakening. But I actually have a confession to make. I never saw An Inconvenient Truth. When it came out, my dad, Pete Toscano, this working class guy from the Bronx in New York City, he called me one day about it. At that time, he was like watching, I don't know, like 10 movies a week. And he would come up with these one or two line reviews about them. So he's on the phone from New York and he says, yeah, I saw that Al Gore movie, The Inconvenient One. That movie, wow, it's so important. And it's boring as hell.
That's so good.
I'd love for you to share with my listeners why a climate podcast with comedians is so important right now.
If people engage with climate change in a way that is like silly and light and whimsical, like that is enough, right? The hope is perhaps that they engage with our stuff and then they are like invited in, right? It's an invitation in to think about these things more. And then they find a bunch of resources, including Citizen Climate Radio. Yeah, we're not providing them like this in-depth thing. We are just merely being like, let's engage with this topic in a way that is silly and light and banter. And it's quick. It's 15 minutes. We're in. We're out. To me, it's revolutionary for people to be like, wait, I left during a climate change conversation, right? It's like, it wasn't horrible. I didn't feel heavy. And then with that, they can further engage. So we're really trying to reach people who are maybe already interested in this stuff, but especially is like, knows that it's a thing, but like, I don't want to Google it. Oh, it's just going to be bad news. Those people are so important who like have a heart for this stuff, who want to find out more, but just think it's like a thing that's impossible to. There's all these different ways and we're just trying to offer a different touch point. And we're just trying to be this very silly bridge, this bridge where they like tap dance their way over.
I don't think I've heard climate change and tap dancing ever in the same conversation before. What works so well on your show is this playful banter that you have with the guest comedian who, I don't know, sometimes knows very little about climate change, which is great because, gosh, there is so much climate jargon out there.
The conversation has been going on for so long, rightfully so. I mean, this is in a disheartening way, right? Like in 1980, the UN was like, hey, guys, climate change. And we're all like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Give us, you know, 40 years and then we'll start to really think about this. Having someone be a surrogate for an audience who is a little bit nervous and doesn't exactly know or has these questions, right? Like, but I think part of that is, oh, wait, PPM? Like, excuse me, I'm so sorry. Like, what parts per million? Like, and what exactly, which gas is the not good one? I'm so sorry. And like planting trees helps or doesn't, but it helps in the right place. Like what, and the right tree in the right place? Who knows that? Have I been planting the wrong tree in the wrong place?
You brought some clips for me to share with listeners, but before we get to those, I have two questions. And now the first one is about hope. These days, it can feel like hope is so rare, especially for those of us folks doing climate work. How do you address the dread and fear so many people feel?
We have a commitment to optimism, but I think two things. I think one is like informed optimism, right? We don't want it to be like close your eyes and laugh. All the people who come on the show are comedians. They're usually touring comedians and they're like stand-up comedy for the most part. And I think a bunch of them don't know, for example, that like solar power is the cheapest power. They don't know that California grid, like when you use electricity, is a ton of renewable energy and it's like growing and growing. If I'm switching to electric in California and other states are following this, like it's pretty good, man. We're using a ton of renewable energy in that way or whatever it is, right? Like, so a bunch of that is like informed optimism of like, I bet you don't even... No, because we hear that that's like, one, that there's good things happening or that they're like, we're gaining some momentum in this fight against climate change. Or two, I bet you can't even picture how to envision a future, right? I think a lot of people know what the world will look like if everything is horrible, right? That there's a lot of doomsday scenarios. And there's like not that many movies that it's like, it's 2050 and you know what? World looks pretty good. Like you can, whatever, walk to a park and public transportation. Ooh, it's clean and it's fast and it's beautiful. And you know, like.
That's a really great approach. And I'm sure the humor helps too. It relaxes people when they laugh. Okay, here's the second question. And it's about audience. So you're appearing here on episode 70 of Citizens Climate Radio. And we have thousands of listeners. But when it comes to creating a show, I really only have one person in mind, Susan Miller. Susan Miller is a Citizens Climate volunteer in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. She's married with children and now grandchildren. She's super committed to doing climate work and she can easily become overwhelmed. So she wants to be reminded about how important this work is. She also needs to hear good news. And she definitely appreciates someone curating all the information that's out there. So every show is made for Susan Miller. And fortunately, there are a lot of people just like Susan Miller, so they also benefit.
Yeah, I love that. I think, Peterson, you've got a great takeaway, which we talk a lot at Generation 180 and for people listening in terms of how to, whatever, do climate communications in this certain way. And I think it is the specificity is so important. You thinking of Susan Miller is so good. Us sort of being like, oh, you know what? We're going to go for this audience that is going to respond to comedy. We're going to help be this bridge. Whatever that looks like is so important to get really specific. And I think, frankly, we're still defining exactly our Susan Miller. Weirdly, what is specific is universal, right? Like, I do think just about anyone could listen to ours and find something meaningful, but we're not thinking of everyone. If I get caught up in that urgency, everyone needs to know. You know, it's like, no, I am creating a gift for a very specific person. I'm going to honor their time. I'm going to honor where they are at in terms of their, like, climate journey, just as specific as possible. I hope the podcast is an invitation. A constant invitation for people to think about these things, an invitation to ask questions, an invitation to not know things, an invitation to go like, am I allowed to do this, right? An invitation for people who think this isn't a place for them because they're not scientists, because they don't have whatever, an electric car, you know, because they're not really deeply invested. They're like, can I care about this and not know how to compost? And you're like, yes, literally everyone is invited. I think a lot about how to frame it and how to have it feel as an invitation to both the comedian and the listener.
All right. It's time to hear some excerpts.
Welcome to Comedians Conquering Climate Change. This is a podcast where we talk shop on climate change and clean energy with comedians because we love alliteration. Are you ready to conquer climate change?
We're going
to
do it today and we're going to do it together. If only we'd have met up 20 years ago, we could have gotten this out of the way a long time ago.
Yeah. Climate change just exists and people are like, when are MK and Esteban going to get into a room and record a really quick podcast?
Exactly.
In a way, there is nothing more American than a pickup truck. So to have an electric vehicle that is a pickup truck, it's like marijuana. You know what I mean? Like, this is the gateway drug to environmentalism.
California just voted to outlaw the sale of new gas-powered lawnmowers, leaf blowers, and chainsaws.
We're getting a rake at every meal we sit down at now. It's like they're just at the table.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, you guys want to come over for dinner? Get here at 5, we'll rake, and we'll eat at 7.
One time, I think I saw an internet video that somebody had a rake, and they had like little hot dogs on each of the like points of the rake, and that's where they were grilling hot dogs. So you could actually do a rake and bake, like a rake and dinner.
A rake and bake.
A rake and bake.
You know what? You can't do that with gas-powered leaf blowers. China is planning this massive new clean energy project. It's got solar and wind. It's half the size of Belgium, which would be so impressive if I knew how big Belgium was.
I mean, I feel like I kind of know Belgium, but I don't really know. It's a very confusing metric.
Like, part of me is like, smaller than France? Question mark?
It's like saying, oh yeah, it's the same size as 45,000 horses. Like, okay, that seems like a big area, but why are we using that metric?
Okay, I'll play it. You sing this round.
Okay.
Spending money on subsidies. Thought it'd be good, but it's not for me. I want an earth that is healthy. Unfairly giving money to all the wrong things. We're talking about subsidies.
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 Subsidies. Yeah.
Talking about those subsidies.
Not for me. Not for me.
We're saying subsidies.
Yeah, subsidies. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Baby, yeah.
Those were clips of Esteban Gast and his guest, Josh Bernstein, Bianca Cristoval, and M.K. Paulson. Esteban, it's a really great show. I love listening to it. And I need right now to go and give you a 5-star review and write a review over at Apple Podcast. I mean, right? It's great having people listen to the show, but they can actually support the show when they go over there and rate and review it. How can my listeners follow you and find your podcast?
Yeah, you can find the show everywhere podcast is. It's called Comedians Conquering Climate Change. Like you said, Peterson, it's amazing if you like leave a review or stars. It is so funny. Totally. The people who are like, oh my gosh, I love your show. And I was like, thank you for telling me, also telling me publicly in a review format. Boy, does that help. You can find out everything Generation 180 is doing at generation180.org. They are like truly are committed to flipping the script from doom and gloom from doom and gloom to hope and optimism. They're doing an incredible job. And you can, if you want to, I also have a bunch of other projects that are like similarly education entertainment-y. And I'm at Real, R-E-A-L, Esteban Gast, E-S-T-E-B-A-N-G-A-S-T. On just about every social media.
Thank you so much, Esteban Gast, for coming on the show. My listeners are going to love you.
Amazing. Thank you. This was so fun. Those were such wonderful questions. I hope I didn't ramble too much. Now you're like the power of the editor.
Don't worry. I've got the editing tools and you've given me so much good stuff to work with. Now it is time for the Art House. Now, I don't know about you, but working on climate change totally can stress me out. When I mentioned this to my doctor, she suggested I get a dog. She explained that caring for a dog can get my mind off my troubles, and walking a dog is relaxing, and it's also good for my health, good exercise. If I were to get a dog, likely I would want to get a Chihuahua. And for this, I totally blame my neighbor Janine. Janine has an adorable Chihuahua named Chica. And Chica is old. I don't know how old Chica is, like 15 years old, and has this like raspy bark. It's like, wah, wah, wah. I wonder if like Chica earlier in life had been a smoker or something. Of all the dogs, a Chihuahua is the smallest breed. The average Chihuahua is like 2 to 6 pounds. In fact, they're so small that they're often born with a soft spot on their heads, like human babies, because their head is too big for the birth canal. Chihuahuas are also super smart, maybe too smart. They have the largest brain-to-body ratio of any dog. The ancient Aztecs of old believed that the early ancestors of the Chihuahuas had these special powers to take a disease away from a human. Back in those days, Chihuahuas were used sort of like as hot packs. And maybe that's why they like to sit on our laps so much. Centuries-old folklore suggests that Chihuahuas were able to cure respiratory ailments such as asthma and allergies. And, you know, you can almost imagine, like, the traditional healer being sent in because someone's sick, and the traditional healer, you know, doing a little diagnosis, and then finally says, you know what, I'm going to prescribe for you 4 Chihuahuas. Yeah, it's serious. You need the 4 Chihuahuas. So here we are again in the modern age, and a doctor is encouraging a human, me, to get a dog. And it just may be time. Because not too long ago, I heard Dr. Neil Leary at Dickinson College in Pennsylvania talking about climate change. He said something in his talk about fossil fuel pollution I had never considered before. So he was talking about gasoline and carbon dioxide, and then he talked about the weight of carbon dioxide. Which was so weird, because, like, to me it was like, you know, an angel on a pinhead. We add it up by parts per million. It's like, seems so tiny. What is the weight of carbon dioxide? Well, let's work backwards. A gallon of gasoline weighs about 6 pounds, which is actually lighter than water. A gallon of water weighs 8 pounds. And where do we get our petroleum from for our cars? We get that gallon of gas from crude oil. But how do we get crude oil? How is it produced? Okay, this is where the numbers go off the charts. 98 tons of organic matter is compressed over millions of years, and that is what is needed to produce enough crude oil to produce a single gallon of gasoline. My brain, it cannot envision 98 tons. I don't know what that is. So I need to compare it to something else. 98 tons. Now, listen, I'm no mathematician, so these are like rough estimates here. But 98 tons would equal approximately 40 acres of wheat, the stalks, heads, and roots. 98 tons would add up to approximately 33 adult female African elephants. 98 tons could be, I don't know, 55 cars. And 98 tons would add up to approximately 40,000 chihuahuas. So could you imagine this? 40,000 chihuahuas piled on top of each other, being smooshed together for millions of years to produce enough crude oil to produce 1 gallon of gasoline. Now, this is when it gets really freaky, and this is when it started haunting me. So that 1 gallon of gasoline, which weighs 6 pounds approximately, once it goes through your system, we put it into our cars physically, it combusts and combines with oxygen and produces 20 pounds of carbon dioxide. Now, while it's impossible for me to grapple with 98 tons of organic matter or 450 parts per million of carbon dioxide molecules, I can totally understand 20 pounds. I know what it feels like to gain 20 pounds, and I know how hard it is to lose those 20 pounds. I can totally envision 20 pounds. 10 sweet, adorable chihuahuas that weigh 2 pounds each. When I hear 20 pounds, it immediately makes me think of sugar, though. Not individual granules of sugar, but those 4-pound bags of sugar, 5 of them, 20 pounds of sugar. These bags have weight. They have mass. 5 pounds of sugar, well, it can do damage to a body, carried or consumed. And what if I did it, though? And every time I went anywhere and used a gallon of gas, I put another 20 pounds on my body. Gallon after gallon, I'm like adding them up, 20 plus 20 plus 20 plus 20. Because the thing is, it's invisible. We can't see it. We can't smell it. We can't taste it. We can't see it with our eyes. But it's there, all around us, weighing us down. You know, it's not just me, but like government officials. Government needs to do something about this. For instance, the president has a specially outfitted armor limo that weighs over 11,000 pounds. It's estimated that at best it gets 8 miles to the gallon, at best. So a trip from, say, Wilmington, Delaware, to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue in D.C., the home of President Joe Biden, it's approximately 111 miles. That would be about 888 gallons of gasoline. That means one trip churns out over 17,000 pounds of carbon dioxide. That's over 71,000 chihuahuas. What does this all mean to me? I'm not sure, but it definitely ramps up my effort to say we need to put a price on carbon. And I think I've decided I'm going to ditch my car. We'll just be a one-car family. And perhaps it's time that I get that chihuahua. And now it's time for our good news report. We hear from Lori Byron, a co-chair of the Citizens Climate Health Team. The team has hundreds of CCL health professionals. Lori serves as the point person between the American Academy of Pediatrics and Citizens Climate Chapter volunteers.
For the past several years, healthcare providers have worked hard to frame climate change as a health issue. Many healthcare providers are immersed in climate and health advocacy, including within Citizens Climate Lobby, where we have 400 providers on the CCL health team who care passionately. We try to use our trusted voices on this issue. The American Academy of Pediatrics, the medical society that I fall into, has a long history of advocacy for children. But until recently, their efforts, which were all admirable, involved national legislation and national policy. Because of experience gained lobbying with CCL, we saw that Congress people care about constituents and what they say, not necessarily about national medical and scientific organizations. So the Committee on Environmental Health and Climate Change within the Academy of Pediatrics created a chapter climate advocates program just over 2 years ago. We have been able to identify one or more advocates in every state. Within these 2 years, 19 of the 57 chapters now have a resolution saying climate change is real, now, affecting our kids, and demanding of urgent action. 20 now have climate committees. A number of chapters have added energy issues into their legislative agendas. And many of the statewide pediatric websites and newsletters to pediatricians and families now have climate information. Pediatricians have become really creative. Some are working with universities on heat mapping projects. Others are working with Girl Scouts, pharmacies, municipalities, and science and art museums on climate actions. Some are serving on air boards, while others are writing grants. Many in healthcare feel that trainees being tested on climate and health will shift the paradigm. And to that effect, many are working to get climate on the standardized tests for health providers. Climate advocate pediatricians and pediatricians in training are working to incorporate climate into medical school and residency curriculum. Pediatric climate advocates created a maintenance of certification module on climate and health for the American Board of Pediatrics in the past year. This is the first medical board to have climate and health as a topic for board recertification. Two research studies published in the past year showed that parents were generally appreciative to receiving climate information from their pediatrician, which was really groundbreaking because many providers are uncomfortable broaching climate in patient encounters. The progress has been impressive and the enthusiasm is contagious. We hope to see other medical societies replicate the concept.
If you have a good news story you want to share on the show, email me, radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. Thank you so much for joining me for episode 70 of Citizens Climate Radio. It was a little different, right, from our typical show. Next month's going to be different too. I chat with four veterinarians in South Africa. They talk about pets and climate change and wild animals. Here at Citizens Climate Education, we have a solution that will greatly reduce pollution, which leads to climate change. We believe that putting a price on carbon is going to make a huge difference, and we want to tell you more about it. Visit cclusa.org/price on carbon. cclusa.org/price on carbon. Citizens Climate Radio is written and produced by me, Peterson Toscano. Other technical support from Ricky Bradley and Brett Cease. Social media assistance from Ashley Hunt Montorano, Flannery Winchester, Katie Zarkreski, and Steve Volk. Moral support from Madeline Pera. Visit citizensclimatelobby.org to see our show notes and find links to our guest. Citizens Climate Radio is a project of Citizens Climate Education.